And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
It all happens so fast. You're out with your friends on a weekend retreat. It's a beautiful afternoon. Spring flowers are beginning to shoot up in the forest. You've got your new field guide, and it's a perfect opportunity to identify a few new flowers. You wander off with your book in hand, sit down with some new species, and then you notice clouds moving in. It's getting colder. You didn't bring a jacket, so you pick up your book and head back. After an hour, you realize you're lost. Today, it's a lesson in survival. When your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
It happens every year. The story of a young hiker who wanders away from a family get-together in a park, and then the terrible feeling that something's gone wrong. The hiker has been gone far too long. There just may be no worse feeling than to sense that someone you love and care about has gone missing. When it happens on a trip to the backcountry, the fears multiply. And to a large extent, the attempts to locate the lost hiker increase in rugged and varied terrain. So many things can go wrong. This past week, we've been following the story of a 12-year-old scout who was lost for 4 days in the mountains of North Carolina. Quickly, National Park Rangers mounted a search and were assisted by various professional and volunteer search and rescue teams, including the canine trackers. Finally, Gandalf, a 2-year-old retriever on his first search and rescue mission, bobbed his head 3 times, and across the river, there was 12-year-old Michael Aubrey, dehydrated and hungry, but otherwise all right. Today we bring you wise counsel on what you need to know if you should ever find yourself lost. It's a lesson in survival, and we dedicate segments 2 and 3 to this very important topic. Following today's news, we've been hearing for many months about the glass walkway that was being constructed in the Grand Canyon. And after 4 years of work, it opened this week. You're going to get an aerial view of the new Skywalk adventure as we travel to the Hualapai Nation and talk with Sherry Yellowhawk, who took the first steps into the wonder 4,000 feet above the canyon floor. It's a great show coming up. So let's get right into today's news. So now, the news. Al Gore was back in Washington bringing the inconvenient truth about global warming to both the House and the Senate. He laid out the challenge to the leadership.
A time will come when a future generation will look back on 2007 at this hopeful time, and they will ask one of two questions. Either they will ask, what in God's name were they doing? Didn't they see the evidence? Didn't they hear the warnings? Didn't they see the mountain glaciers melting in every part of this earth? Didn't they see the North Polar ice cap melting? Didn't they hear the scientists say it may be gone in as little as 34 years? Didn't they hear the seismographers telling them that the earth is shaking because of the glacial earthquakes on Greenland? 32 of them this year. Up to 5.1 on the Richter scale. Didn't they see the evidence of nature being on the run?
Some of his old adversaries made it clear why they can't seem to hear Al Gore's message.
I've structured my questions so they're yes or no questions, and they don't require a lot of elaboration. So let me start off with 4, and these should be pretty easy. I know the answer because I've heard some quotes from you that lead me to believe what the answer is. First of all, yes or no, do you believe that human-caused global warming is a moral, ethical, and spiritual issue affecting our survival?
Yes, I do.
Yes or no, do you believe that reducing fossil fuel-based energy usage will lead to lower greenhouse gas emissions?
It depends on what the substitutes are, but basically, yes. I think we can capture and sequester the carbon and continue using carbon-based
energy. Very good. In yes or no, do you believe that home energy use is a key component, not the only component, but a key component to overall energy use?
I believe that buildings as well as cars and trucks and factories are definitely a part of the problem, yes.
All right. Now, I'd like to put up the little pledge thing here. I'm going to ask you if you would like to commit here today. You know how many hundreds of thousands of fans you have out there that would like to follow your lead. And this pledge merely says, as you can read it up there, that you're agreeing to consume no more energy in your residence than the average American household by 1 year from today. Not right now. You've got a whole year to try to do this. Now, the one thing I'd like to have you not use in response to this question, which is a yes or no question, is the various gimmicks. Now, I have something I want to submit for the record, Madam Chairman, that talks about the effects, the offsets and the credits are gimmicks used by the wealthy so they don't have to change their lifestyles. And I have an article that is last Sunday's United Kingdom Times. I'd like to submit for the record at this time.
You may.
All right. What's your answer?
Well, first of all, Senator, thank you so much for your question.
All right. I noticed Tipper didn't say thank you for the question.
Oh, I'm sure she would. But
you're welcome.
Yeah. You know, one of the other recommendations that I would have is that you also set standards for green energy produced by utilities. And one reason I say that in response to what you're saying here is that that's what we purchase, and we pay more for it because it's relatively uncommon.
Senator
you've asked the senator an important question. He's answering it. Given
all right, if you could stop the clock during this time.
No, I'm not going to stop the clock. He has a minute to answer. How can you ask a question and not give a man a minute to answer? Please.
Yeah, we purchase wind energy and other green energy that does not produce carbon dioxide. And that does cost a little more now, and that is one of the reasons why it costs a little more. We're also in the process of renovating an old home. And we live not far from where Lamar and Honey Alexander do. And we,
Senator Gore, you had so much more time. I'm going to have to.
Could I make one other point? Because a lot of communities actually have laws preventing the installation of solar photovoltaic.
So I assume the answer is no. Let's go to the next question.
And if I could continue, I believe that there should be a federal provision that overrides any local restrictions.
All right, Senator Gore, I'm very sorry. I don't want to be rude, but from now on, I'm going to ask you to respond for the record in writing, since you're not going to respond.
Well, if I choose to respond to you verbally here, I hope that'll be okay, too.
If it's a very brief response. All right. I'm sure you read the New York Times article that quoted the scientist. I mentioned this in my opening statement about they're criticizing you for some of your being too alarmist and hurting your own cause. Now, I'll ask you to respond in writing for that one, because that would be a very long response, I'm afraid. Now, it seems that global warming and the media joined the chorus last summer.
Excuse me, Senator Knopf, we'll freeze the time for a minute.
Oh, yes.
I'm just trying to make...
Take your time. We're freezing the time.
We're freezing the time. Just for a minute. I want to talk to you a minute, please. Would you agree to let the Vice President answer your questions? And then if you want an extra few minutes at the end, I'm happy to give it to you. But we're not going to get anywhere.
Why don't we do this?
You're asking
Why don't we
questions?
Do this? At the end, you can have as much time as you want to answer all the questions.
No, that isn't the rule. You're not making the rules. You used to when you did this. You don't do this anymore. Elections have consequences. Elections have consequences, so I make the rules. But here's the thing. I want you to get your questions answered.
Gore outlined steps he feels can lead to eventually addressing the challenges ahead.
I want to talk to you a little bit about some ideas that I believe could help hopefully help in your deliberations. First of all, I think that we ought to have an immediate freeze on CO2 emissions and start the reductions from there. Secondly, I think that we ought to use the tax code not to increase taxes, Senator Inhofe. I'm not for that. I think we ought to cut taxes on employment and take that burden off employees and employers and make up the difference with pollution taxes, principally CO2 taxes. Third, I believe that we ought to have a moratorium on any new coal plants that are not fixed with carbon capture and sequestration technology. It is simply irresponsible to go forward without carbon capture and sequestration. Fifth, I believe that this Congress, this Senate, should fix a date in the future beyond which incandescent light bulbs are banned. Sixth, we ought to have an electronet, and we ought to encourage widely distributed power generation by homeowners, by small business owners, and here's the key. You ought to take off the cap, let them sell as much as they want to into the grid. Then I think we ought to raise the CAFE standards for auto efficiency. I do think it ought to be part of a comprehensive solution. Don't single out autos as the main culprit. It is part of it, and it's a significant part of it. Next, I would propose that you pass a carbon neutral mortgage association, or Connie Mae, and here's why. Expenditures that go into more insulation and window treatments and the expenditures that don't pay back immediately, but they pay back over 2 or 3 years in lower energy bills, they're not used because they raise the purchase price. Put those in a separate instrument and have a Connie Mae that bundles those and sells them in the marketplace. Then when you go to a closing, you sign your mortgage and the banker and the seller say, now here's your Connie Mae here. This is going to lower your electricity bills. You're going to save, reduce CO2 at the same time. This is my last recommendation. Require corporate disclosure of carbon emissions. Investors have a right to know about material risks that could affect the future value of the stocks that they purchase. I want to close by reemphasizing my belief that it is also the greatest opportunity we've ever confronted. We can become more efficient and more productive. We can create more jobs and lift our standards of living. And in the process, we can save the habitability of this planet and tell that future generation that we were up to the challenge and we did what some thought was impossible. We did it on a bipartisan basis. And in the process, we gained the vision and moral authority in our generation to take on these other challenges that also need our attention. Thank you.
Vice President Gore was clear that he felt an immediate freeze on CO2 emissions, coupled with a nationwide cap and trade program, would communicate a solid commitment by the nation's leaders to address these problems. This past winter was the warmest on record worldwide, according to a report released by the U.S. government on changing climate. The report follows on an earlier study by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that stated that the warming conditions are almost certainly a result of the effects of a modernizing world. Translated, the report stated that the rate of increase in temperatures has tripled in the last 40 years. Without fanfare, the Department of the Interior reinterpreted protections and practices relating to endangered species, which stated that only species of plants and animals which are struggling for survival will be provided protections, while no actions or protections will be provided for healthy populations or where they have already disappeared. Numerous conservation groups responded that the reinterpretation could result in 80% of current species identified as endangered being declassified because they no longer exist in a particular area or are not currently underpopulated. This would take the teeth out of legal protections offered to animals who may be threatened and remove legal mandates to restore various animal and plant species that have already been decimated. The critical feature, which has been tested by the courts in suits involving government lawyers, tries to establish the precedent that a species cannot be listed based on its disappearance in a portion of its range unless that disappearance would directly result in threatening its continued survival everywhere. This issue will continue to find its way into court cases with greater frequency. And with all the attention now focused on the plight of the polar bear due to climate change, in Berlin, Germany, a national tug-of-war with two sides wanting to determine the future of a 19-pound polar bear cub is tearing that country apart. Knut, one of two cubs abandoned by its mother at the Berlin Zoo, managed to survive with human intervention to care and feed the little cub following the death of his little bear brother as a result of the mother's abandonment of the cubs. Animal rights activists demanded that if the mother abandoned the cub, it is immoral and unnatural for the bear to be saved by humans, and therefore it should be killed. Needless to say, this was not received well by most of the German public, and certainly not by the zoo officials who have adopted the little white bear cub, sleeping with him and feeding him. It has become yet another media circus, and perhaps the best we can say is that we've learned from this skirmish that the problems of the sensationalist press are not limited to the American media. The effects of globalization now are being felt, as would be expected, around the world. And that's the news. And a few reminders. For the past few weeks, I've been hinting that something's coming, and now it's time to give you the first inkling of what that is. I'm thrilled to announce that in the months ahead, the Wildside News will be providing a weekly Earth Summit, bringing together some of the world's leading voices in a brief, to-the-point weekly briefing on events that are shaping our world. That's all I'm going to say right now, but next week, I'll tell you more. And a reminder that next week, we talk with Mark Beckoff as he talks about the emotional lives of animals. Be sure to tune in. And now it's time to head on out to the Hualapai Nation for a special report on the new skywalk that has been making the news. There's a lot of news these days coming out of the Grand Canyon about an amazing opportunity for people to experience the Grand Canyon like they've never experienced it before. And this is something that we're seeing. It's just launched, as a matter of fact, in the last couple of days, which is something called Skywalk. And to help us really get an appreciation of exactly what Skywalk is, we're now joined by Sherry Yellowhawk, who is the CEO of the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation. Sherry, welcome to the Wildside News.
Thank you.
Well, you've been very busy. You've been busy talking about this absolutely new, spectacular opportunity for people to experience the Grand Canyon. Tell us a little bit about Skywalk.
Well, the Skywalk is actually the vision of David Jin. It started off in 1996 when I wasn't a part of the company as a small idea of a 10-foot glass platform over the edge of the canyon, and when I became CEO of the company in 2002, we started talking about it again, and I guess the board had previously approved it, but nobody took off with it, and so it still was that little 10-foot platform. It sort of evolved from there, and now it was a 3-year process because the tribe has its own internal environmental, cultural, and biological, and its own processes, and so we had to go through all those processes and engaging in the terms of the deal with the investor, and it has evolved into what you see today, the horseshoe-shaped platform that is 70 feet out from the canyon wall.
I always try to imagine, because I'm an idea person. I love coming up. I have too many ideas, okay? and trying to take an idea and bring it into reality is the challenge. Ideas are cheap, but bringing it into reality is the hard part. I'm just curious what you can share about how it moves from a 10-foot vision to this extraordinary 70-foot. What was involved in that? How did that happen, particularly when you're dealing with any organization? And in your case, it happens to be the Hualapai tribe. How did that evolve?
Well, it was, first it was this 10-foot platform at, we have a point out there, and it's kind of a funny term. It's because there used to be old guano mines there. It's called Guano Point, and it was originally thought to be there, but we thought, well, it's going to take away from its own panoramic view there, and then we thought, well, let's look at Eagle Point, and Eagle Point is named because of there's a rock formation there that actually looks like a huge eagle with its wings spanned out. And we had a ex-CEO, and I want to mention his name, Cameron Danes, because he really did contribute to this horseshoe-shaped concept of moving the platform type of concept into this horseshoe-shaped concept. And then at that time it was this, it went from 15 feet, and then our CFO and David Jin thought, well, you can only put this many people and you're only going to make this much money in. And then it went from 15 to 30 to 70. And now we're even looking at, well, we could have put it out another 50 feet.
Oh, wow.
So, but it would have took away from the visitor experience if there's too many people out there. So over the years since 2002, which the ball really started rolling in 2003, the idea has evolved in that order.
It's an amazing accomplishment in a five-year period, because it's a massive structure, and the engineering and the architecture alone, typically one would think would take even longer than that to accomplish. For people who somehow have missed this story, tell people exactly what they're going to experience through Skywalk.
Well, there's a whole array of experiences, because on the first tribal walk, which occurred 2 days ago, my first walk, I wasn't afraid of it, because I know the engineering of it. It was way overbuilt, and it will probably still, the steel structure will still be there 1,000 years from now. And my first experience of it was seeing the canyon, the same point that I see almost on a weekly basis, in a whole different perspective. But when I watched the tribal members go out there on the 19th, it was just like being a little kid again, because I watched a whole array of emotions and expressions, and some were scared and some were excited and some were just, you know, wow and awed, and I mean, there's, what I like about it is that there is going to be an individual experience for everyone. It's not just one experience. Everyone is going to have their own experience of the Skywalk. And some people laid on the glass, and some people, clung onto the rail. Some people just walk right down the middle. Some people, looked over the edge and wanted to go all different angles, because it really is a 360-degree view of that point of the canyon, and you can see it in a whole different perspective. Mm-hmm. And so it was just wonderful for me to see a majority of our tribal membership experience that. That was a great day for me.
Well, I know for myself, I mean, for anyone who maybe somehow has missed what is involved in Skywalk, it is a big 70-foot horseshoe-shaped structure that has an absolutely clear glass bottom.
Yes.
Walkway. You walk on glass. So, you know, that just walking on glass itself over any kind of gap would be a bit of a challenge. But when you're 4,000 feet off the ground, that first step has got to be a test of your will and your strength.
Yes, and well, for me, as long as things aren't moving, I'm okay. You put me in a helicopter and an airplane, I don't do too well in there if it's bumpy And but the skywalk, it's not moving. So, well, I shouldn't say that, because the glass can't, it can't be rigid. It
right.
has to move a little bit. It's part of the architecture, it's part of the engineering. It has to move a little bit, otherwise it would crack eventually with all the movement. It's a part of the engineering.
Hmm.
So it gives that almost like cracking sound, so it adds to the effect.
Oh, wow.
And so that doesn't sit easy with a lot of people.
Wow.
And so it actually moves.
It's an enormous structure. There's, what, a million?
A million pounds of steel. And the glass, I can't remember how much it adds to it. It's quite a bit more, the glass itself that adds to it.
There's fully about 8 inches thick of glass. It's a different layers, and I thought it was very clever that the top layer...
Oh, it's not even 8 inches.
Isn't it, really?
It's about 4.5 inches.
Oh, is that right? Yeah, yes. I guess maybe that's right. The top layer is a thinner layer such that that can be replaced because it will get scratched through time. And part of that is apparently when you visit Skywalk, you have to put on special shoes.
Yes, we have little booties.
Little booties.
They're almost like when you... like surgical booties. But they also help you not to slip, because the glass has to be cleaned daily, so you get a better experience. But they help with not to scratch the glass, and also for the visitors not to slip.
Mm-hmm. So you walk out on glass, and therefore you're stepping out almost like you're flying, like a bird, I suppose, and or hovering really above the canyon. And then the walls of the are glass as well. So you
yes.
look out. Mm-hmm.
Yes, on the sides there's 32 inches on each side of that is steel that you could, you know, if you don't want to totally experience just the glass, and there was a lot of people sticking to that side. Well, I wouldn't say a lot. Sticking to the side where you can just stay on the steel.
You mean kind of like the inner loop of the
yeah,
of
the inner and the outer.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's the part of the steel beam that
I
the
see.
Glass sits on.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a few people that would just stay there, but not too many. And I expected more. I really did when I first seen it. I really expected a lot more people to walk on those portions, and I really expected like 70 to 80% of the people to be there. But my God, I just seen people just going straight down the middle, and just like I was, because I, besides the construction workers, I really did take the first walk. And I went straight down the middle. I thought, oh, well, I'm going to go for it.
Yeah, you may as well.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
Well,
and
it is safe, too. I mean, we need to overemphasize the fact that we're going to have natural fears, just because many people do, you
mm-hmm.
know, stepping out into space. But it is there's no chance this is going to give you any kind of a hard time.
No way.
Yeah, exactly. You know, one of the things that a lot of people, I think, misunderstand, a lot of people through the press think this is in actually Grand Canyon National Park, and it's not.
It's not. It's on the Hualapai Indian Reservation, and it's on the far west side of the Grand Canyon, and it's closer towards Vegas. But if they show up at the south rim at the national park and they're looking for it, hey, we got an airplane ready to take them to the west rim.
Oh, that's exciting. Well, that's fun. Then you get a double bonus. You get
yeah.
a chance to see the Grand Canyon from the air, and then as well, literally out in the middle of the Grand Canyon.
Yes. So if they're going there saying, where's the Skywalk? Well, you can get on this airplane, and we'll take you over there, and you can experience us and bring you on back, because we're quite different from this South Rim. We have more of a pristine setting, and the South Rim is more wide.
Mm-hmm.
Our cliffs are more dramatic and dropped off and just straight down.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a different the scenery is just very different.
Well, tell everybody what you think would be a great way to experience this. You know, it's about 240 some miles, I believe, from the South Rim. So that's, you know, if you're going to decide to drive, that's a bit of a day's drive. But what's the best way for, what do you think is the best way for people to experience the Skywalk?
I think, it depends on where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Give me an example. Where are you coming
from?
Well,
a lot of people come from Las Vegas, I'm sure.
Okay, but if it depends on, you know, how much money you have and if you're driving.
Okay, let's talk about a family. Let's say a family wants to go out there and they've got two, three kids and a mom and a pop and they want to visit the Skywalk.
And they rented a car?
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay, so they rented a car. I would say that they should get on our website, destinationgrandcanyon.com. And they rent a car, and when they call get the book their package, actually, there's a park and ride, because unfortunately we have 14 miles of a dirt road, which we're taking care of. We're going to start construction on paving that 14 miles this summer, and which isn't our land, but we're paying for it, our land meaning Hualapai land. And but we have a park and ride so that rental car companies don't have to worry about their cars getting beat up. And that family can get on that park and ride bus, which will take them to Grand Canyon West. They will check in at the terminal, and they will purchase a Spirit package and Skywalk package, which is the Spirit is $49.95. And the Skywalk is $25. And that may sound like a lot, but it's not like the $25 that per car going to the South Rim and you stand at the canyon and their survey shows that the average visitor only looks at the canyon for 15 minutes. They have an actual survey that shows this. With our package, you get going to Guano Point, which shows the remnants of the old guano mine, which operated in the 1950s, and you can actually see the old tramway remnants, and you see the river, and there's a small hike there that is spectacular, and you can actually, you have your meal there, which is included in the package, and you don't get that at the South Rim. And you eat on the rim of the canyon. And we have our Hualapai members selling various arts and crafts there. So that's just one point. And then you go to Eagle Point, where the Skywalk is, and we have an Indian village where authentic dwellings are. There's a Hopi dwelling, there's Havasupai sweat lodges, there's Navajo hogans, and we have greeters that take you through that area. We're continuing to upgrade that area. We're including a gift shop that is only selling authentic Native American arts and crafts, and we're also building a Ramada where they're going to demonstrate the making of what's being sold in that gift shop. We're also including a botanical garden of indigenous plants of the Hualapai and how they were used. And so you get to tour that, and also a performance of Native American dances, Hualapai, and other tribes. And then the Skywalk. You'll get the Skywalk at Eagle Point. And then you get to go to the western town and experience the Old West, and you can have an optional horseback ride. There is a petting zoo with a steer. His name is Norman. He thinks he's a dog, and we can't convince him he's not. And there's panning for gold. There's a performance there. You can get a horseback ride to the rim. So there's a whole array, and there's a wagon ride that's included in that package. So there's it for the cost of, it's basically $74.95.
Yeah, $75 is close enough.
Yeah, $75. You have a whole day of events if you can fit it all in.
Right.
And you can either get your meal at Guano Point or the Western Town. It's all you can eat. And the meal at the Western Town, it's a variety every day. The menu changes. Guano Point, it's the same meal every day. And we cook our beef traditionally in the ground. And it's taken out every morning and prepared our traditional way. So, but then we mess it up with barbecue sauce. It's delicious. I eat it every time I go out there. So to compare us to the South Rim in terms of prices is comparing apples and oranges.
This is really an adventure. It's an experience. And
yes.
You've actually answered the question. The best way to do this is to plan a whole day.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to, you know, try to get out there
early.
In the a.m., you know, and then you get a ride. And plus, just driving over 14 miles of dirt road is an adventure all by itself. I've lived in the Southwest and lived off in remote areas, and I miss dirt roads. They're a great adventure. I don't think you should pave it. I think you should just leave it as it is. That could be part of the adventure.
And it's a Joshua Tree forest that you're going through.
Actually, you're offering it's a lot. It's
yeah.
a lot of opportunities to, and just the opportunity, for example, to experience the various cultures, the Native American cultures, as you say, is a very, very important part of this. That really does sound exciting. And by the way, can I get some fry bread?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Well, then I'm coming.
Yeah. Oh, well, and then, you know, our company also offers whitewater rafting. The only one-day whitewater rafting trips originate out of Peach Springs and pull out at Grand Canyon West.
Mm-hmm.
We have cabins at Grand Canyon West that you can stay overnight.
Oh, talk about that. I love cabins.
Yes, we have camping cabins at the Western Town. And we have, I believe we have 9 right now, but by the end of the year we'll have 40. And so, and they're getting booked fast. And they come as a package. They're also on the website. And they come as a package, and they include 3 meals and the spirit package. And people can add on the Skywalk or our Hummer tours, and I forgot to include, we also have helicopter boat tours where you can take a helicopter down to the bottom and land on the bottom and take a smooth water boat trip, which the South Rim does not have. You can't land on the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. I'm overwhelmed. That's a lot of, you've put a lot of effort into this. And
you're ready
and
to come, right?
I am. I'm not that far away. I'm going to give you a call.
Yeah, you need to come visit us.
I will definitely do that because I love the Southwest. If anybody has never experienced that, they absolutely must. And I think this really gives people an opportunity to experience it in a different way. And that would be really from the Native American perspective, the Hualapai tribe. Talk a little bit. Also share, because I think it's important for people as well. It's important for us to honor your legacy. Tell us what you can about the Hualapai and what is the spirit of the Hualapai that you wish to share?
We're a people that 150 years ago, we were hunters and gatherers. And I'm a member of the tribe. And we still have our language is still strong. And we're a proud people. We still make our baskets. We still put our babies in our cradle boards. All of my babies were in cradle boards. And we still try to hold on to our traditions, and we still honor our dead with our ceremonial funerals. We try to hold on to as much as we can, and there's a lot of pride in that. Even though there was so much that was tried to be taken away from us, I think we've overcome a lot of that. And even though there's still a lot of social problems, we try hard to hold on to our traditions and our culture, and it's a difficult task, but the pride is still there.
Well, I've had the great fortune of living amongst the Navajo and as well the Jicarilla Apache. To me, those are sacred memories for me. I want to wish you great success. You've really accomplished something. This just opened within the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Why don't we encourage people to contact the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation and make reservations?
The best way is to get on our website, destinationgrandcanyon.com, and that will get you to everything else. And to our, that will even get you to a number to speak to a live person.
That's great. Well, Sherry Yellowhawk, CEO of the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation, thank you so much for taking your time on this very busy day. I know that you've been extremely busy dealing with all of the events. I look forward to meeting with you and taking a walk on Skywalk.
Great. Thank you.
Another big story this week was the disappearance of a 12-year-old scout in North Carolina who was lost for 4 very long days. The story had a happy ending. The truth is, it can happen to almost anyone, and it can happen so fast. We all need to know what to do if we should ever find ourselves lost. A quick lesson in survival is coming up in the next 2 segments. Don't wander off. We'll be right back with more of the Wild Side News.